Good afternoon, true believers. This is DJ Powers on radio.dominican.edu with your favorite show every Thursday between the panels, where we talk everything comics all the time. And this week, the song that we let in with, Get Up, Stand Up by Bob Marley, is a very happy coincidence. That song actually really fits with a lot of what we're talking about today. We're doing a lot of talking of the X-Men. It's a big week to be an X-Men fan. In between last week's show and today's show, a lot's gone down, a lot's been announced, and I'm really excited to share with you all the news that we have and do a lot of talking about X-Men, because honestly, that might take up our whole show today, and there's nothing wrong with that, because the X-Men are in desperate need of some love. But before we do that, you guys know the drill. Weekly stack. We're going to start off the top with Amazing Spider-Man number 20. Dan Slott's very dark, very detailed clone conspiracy story continues with the highlight issues in the mainline Amazing Spider-Man title, with issue number 20 focusing on the newly revived Dr. Octopus, and it highlights what role Doc Ock has in the specifically in the Jackal's machinations. How did he come back, and what role does he play, and how horribly is Dan Slott going to have Doc Ock ruin Peter Parker's already crumbling life? It's going to be interesting to see. It's certainly nail-biting, and if you're a big Spider-Man fan like myself, Clone Conspiracy is both everything you've wanted and everything you've never wanted in a Spider-Man book, because on one hand, you're getting the classic against all odds Spider-Man type story that we've come to love, but on the other hand, we're seeing our favorite character finally have all of his success crumble down around him again, as Peter Parker is wont to do. You know, usually Peter's gone through a lot. Peter's had a lot of girlfriends die on him. Peter's had a lot of family members die on him. But recently, Peter Parker has become the CEO of his own company, Parker Industries. But the catch to that is he only became a CEO of his own company when, a couple years ago, Dr. Octopus took over Peter Parker's body. Confusing, I know. And when he was running around as the Superior Spider-Man, I remember I was telling you guys about that one. When he was running around as the Superior Spider-Man, he figured, you know what, I'm going to be better than Peter Parker ever was. So by doing that, Doc Ock used his massive intellect to kickstart Peter Parker's own company, and Peter Parker is now one of the richest men in the world and the head of a giant science conglomerate. So we're going to see the Jackal, Doc Ock, all those people bring all of these faces back from the dead from Spider-Man's past, and everything's going to go horribly wrong for our good friend Peter Parker. So absolutely read Amazing Spider-Man number 20, Dan Slott and Giuseppe Camuncoli, to get a greater sense of Doc Ock's role in the clone conspiracy. Next up, also from Marvel, we're going to go through Marvel and then DC and then Independence. So another book from Marvel, Infamous Iron Man number 1 by Brian Michael Bendis with art by Alex Maleev. So Brian and Alex are launching a new volume of Iron Man, but the catch with this one is Iron Man is no longer Tony Stark. Iron Man is one of Marvel's greatest villains now, Victor Von Doom. So what's going on with that is we don't know what happened to Tony Stark. We're going to have to wait for Civil War II to end for us to get a greater sense of possibly where Tony Stark is, if he's dead, if he's missing, whatever happened to him that made him not Iron Man anymore. And for Victor Von Doom, of all people, you know, Dr. Doom to pick up the mantle of Iron Man. That's crazy. But anyway, Dr. Doom, as of late, has taken a more, I wouldn't say heroic turn, but definitely not universe-ending villainy that he's had recently. Marvel's biggest event of the past couple years, Secret Wars, which sparked the line-wide relaunch and all of this crazy business that restarted pretty much the whole universe. Dr. Doom was responsible, and at the end of the story, Dr. Doom had his face fixed and he was back to normal, whether he had memories of, you know, him being God of the universe and all of reality, whether those memories remain intact, remain to be seen. But he is taking a more heroic bent as of late. He's been helping out Iron Man, he's been helping out Tony Stark in his book, and now he's going to headline his own book as the new Iron Man. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of heroic deeds Victor Von Doom believes he can make, considering he's one of the greatest villains Marvel has ever had to offer. So it'll be interesting to see how long this Breaking Bad style, reverse Breaking Bad style story will last before eventually, you know, as we all know, you can't deny your nature. And Victor Von Doom is one of the darkest villains ever. So if something goes wrong, we won't be surprised, but it's just a matter of when, and it's going to be exciting stuff. So next up from Marvel, another great book that I'm really excited about is Black Widow number 7, written by Mark Waid with art by Chris Samnee. So you've probably heard me gush over the works of Wade and Samney in the past, and it's deserved because Wade and Samney are some of the masterclass storytellers in all of comics today. Wade is old school. He's been around forever. Samney, a little newer wave, but, you know, he's timeless. You can already tell. So after Wade and Samney did all this amazing work on a couple years of Daredevil, people were waiting for, oh, are they ever going to team back up again? What are they going to do? And then a couple months ago, they announced it was going to be Black Widow that they came back for. And so far, we're 7 months in. Black Widow has been one hell of a ride. And if it keeps getting better from here, then it could stack up to the Daredevil run. So yeah, the team that made the landmark and multiple award-winning run with Daredevil has been bringing their magic to Black Widow. And you seriously, guys, have to get along for the ride. There's quadruple, double, crazy triple crosses, classic spy espionage, tons of action, lots of guest stars. We've had an Iron Man appearance before it was Victor Von Doom. And Natasha Romanoff making her case for being the best heroine and just one of the best heroes in general in the Marvel Universe. Wade and Samney truly present a master class in how to make a perfect series of comic books. Pick up Black Widow if you want pitch perfect and ridiculous high octane entertainment. The past six issues have been crazy. I've closed every issue with that kind of giddy smile on my face of like, oh my god, this is getting crazy. I need to know what happens next. But the bummer is you gotta wait a month between each book. Really painstaking, but each month it's really worth it. Black Widow has come out on top as of late, and she has an upcoming crossover with the Winter Soldier. So Winter Soldier is one of the cooler characters in the Marvel Universe. So definitely want to get started now, especially because issue 7 is the beginning of a new story arc. So if you want to be a new Black Widow reader, absolutely now is the time. So next book, we're going to DC now. We have Batman number 9 from Tom King and Michael Janin. And, you know, speaking of, I was talking about the painstaking wait of a month between each book. Luckily, the new Batman books and all the DC books, minus a couple, are doing twice a month shipments. So you don't have to wait as long to get your Batman fix, especially when Tom King is at the helm. Because Tom King has been one of the most outstanding writers in comics as of late. He's had an outstanding run on Vision, which is coming to an end, sadly. He's been doing Sheriff of Babylon, which I just picked up the first trade for recently. And I blew through that thing and just, you know, I've got a couple hours. I couldn't put it down. It was crazy good. And Tom King is bringing a lot of that dark political commentary to this Batman story. And what he's doing now is after the first two arcs being an arc where Batman comes to face with two new heroes in Gotham and Gotham Girl. And after that all happened, and, you know, I don't want to spoil things, so I'll do my best not to, but Gotham Girl is now a part of Batman's, I guess you could say, crew. She wants to be one of the greater heroes of Gotham, but she's going insane, and that's in part due to a villain called the Psycho Pirate, who had manipulated her emotions into making her go a little crazy and killing her brother, Gotham. So not much of a spoiler, that's meant to happen, so you're kind of meant to know that, so just hang tight with me. But recently Psycho Pirate has been captured by Bane, the villain Bane. You might know him from Dark Knight Rises, Tom Hardy for all you movie fans. And Gotham Girl is slowly going crazy, crazier and crazier, so Batman needs Psycho Pirate, but he knows he can't do it alone, so he does the unthinkable and enlists within the Suicide Squad. Yes, that's right, the Suicide Squad from the films that we've been seeing, but it's a Suicide Squad of his own design. So he has a lot of classic Suicide Squad members from the John Ostrander run, the 66 John Ostrander run in the 80s and the 90s. So he has Bronze Tiger, he has Punchy and Julie, who were those three characters were crazy classic Suicide Squad characters. Bronze Tiger especially was kind of the moral center of Suicide Squad, a team of villains, and Batman is not wrong to want to have him on the team. And Catwoman is also on the team, believe it or not. So it's really it's going to be interesting to see that mystery unfold of how did Catwoman get into Arkham Asylum with 237 counts of murder. You know, that doesn't really sound like Catwoman's a more of a petty thief. Doesn't really sound like the Catwoman we know. But anyway, Batman's going to take the Suicide Squad team and launch this crazy mission to get the Psycho Pirate from Bane, who Bane is making his first appearance in the relaunch DC Universe even since the New 52. And it's really exciting stuff to see because Bane is one of the few villains who can truly match Batman. Bane is got this Hulk-like strength, But what makes him special is he doesn't forget the fact that he can be great intelligently. So Bane, throughout his childhood, had always sharpened his mind and kept his mind sharp and kept his intelligence sharp. So Bane is just as smart as the Batman, but even stronger. So it's crazy to think how Batman can even match up to him. But so if you want some of Tom King's fantastic writing, if you want to get in on the mainline Batman book while they're starting a new arc, absolutely pick up Batman number 9 with art by the outstanding Michael Giannini. So next we're going to Independence. That was my one notable DC release of the week. Well, actually, no, that wasn't. I drew a fat blank. Superman number 9 also came out this week. And as you know, I've been gushing a little over the Superman book as well these past couple weeks. And that's because, again, Superman's fun again. And they're also embroiled within the arc that is a tribute to the late, great Darwin Cook. Escape from Dinosaur Island is the arc. And I just read the last issue. It was super fun. And it was crazy because there's all these Darwin Cook references. And if you get them, they're awesome little gems for fans of all the Darwin Cook stuff. And this week, Superman is teaming up with the losers from Darwin Cook's most famous and most cherished story. And it's going to be fun to see how they're exactly going to escape Dinosaur Island. So anyway, back on track, back to Independence. My one big Image Comics release of the week has got to be Rumble number 15 by John Arcudi with art by James Herron. So Rumble is sick. It's sick as hell. And it's one of my favorite Image books right now because it's just this John Arcudi is one of the greatest dark fantasy / sci-fi storytellers. And James Herron, I haven't really seen him do many art duties on a lot of books, but he is absolutely killing it on Rumble. And Rumble follows the tale of Rathrak. It's some crazy ancient name. He's the ancient god of war from like the very beginning of time, as he is reincarnated in the body of a straw scarecrow, and he is joined by two unlikely losers on a quest to stop the evil machinations of the dark forces that work behind the scenes and pull the strings of the world at large. So if you want some absolutely insane storytelling and just some super metal art, like they just got these people with sick like full body tattoos and giant double-handed swords and like fire snakes and demons and stuff like that. This book is super metal. If you're a rock and roll fan or if you like dark sword and sorcery stuff, then you should get Rumble because it's going to blow your mind and it's just a fun ride. I have the first couple trades and it's one of those trades that I go back to a lot just to stare at the art because James Herron, I don't know if James Herron gets enough praise, but his art is outstanding. His line work is dynamic. You feel the movement. Like, a lot of artwork can feel stiff, but James Herron's artwork, to me, feels like a crazy, like, if you put on, like, a rock and roll, like, you put on, like, a Slayer or, like, a Metallica song, especially with Rumble, then, you know, you can really feel the crazy, like, sword slices, and you could hear the punches and the kicks, and you could just hear the guitar riffs in the background. Like, it's so sick. So James Herron's art, like, if you get this book just to look at it, you're not wrong. It's not a waste of your money. If anything, that's what you should do. Not to discredit John Arcudi's art, but John Arcudi's writing, but James Herron's art is definitely the ticket buyer right there. So definitely get the Rumble number 15. And if you really like it, get the trades. Because seriously, guys, that's a great Image book that shouldn't be slept on. Too many people are sleeping on it. Pick up Rumble number 15. That has got to be my gem of the week. Absolutely. So we're going to go on a quick break. This has been DJ Powers on Between the Panels. And when we come back, we're going to get through this absolute massive tidal wave of X-Men news and hopefully excite some of you fans of Marvel's Merry Mutants. So I'll see you guys when we get back. We'll be right back. welcome back, True Believers. And for those of you who are just joining us, welcome. This is DJ Powers on Between the Panels, where we talk everything comics all the time, every Thursday from 2 to 3 on radio.dominican.edu. And today, it's a very Marvel-centric day, but you know what? That's okay, because I give a lot of love to all the other publishers, and I try to stay unbiased, but it should be no secret by now that my favorite publisher is Marvel Comics, and one of the greatest Marvel teams of all time is definitely the X-Men, who are in desperate need of some love right now, and they're going through some dark times, both in the publishing side and in the continuity side. So we're gonna give a lot of spotlight on the X-Men today. We're gonna go through all the big announcements, because seriously, this isn't just news. This is like the conspiracy theorists should be shutting up now, because this stuff is exciting. And then we're totally gonna go over. I'm going to give some suggestions on what I think good X-Men stories are if you want to just get into them. But without further ado, let's get into the news. So Marvel has been recently gearing up. Like I've been saying the past couple weeks, Marvel's been gearing up for, they are currently in the middle of Death of X, a crazy dark storyline that highlights what happened necessarily between the X-Men and the Inhumans that sparked this Cold War type scenario. And then later on, in about a month, IVX, aka Inhumans versus X-Men, is going to start. And it's basically a quote-unquote civil war. Not really, because Marvel's already going through a civil war, but it is a war between races. X-Men and the Inhumans are going to be going at it for a fight for survival, really. But something's got to go right, because at the very end of all this, there's going to be a new X-Men publishing initiative called Resurrection, spelled in a very creative way, R-E-S-U-R-R-X-I-O-N. So they're replacing about three or four letters with just the big letter X. I'm making an X with my arms. You can't see right now for effect, but, you know, because it's the X-Men line, so you got to have X everywhere you could possibly have it. And so something's good got to happen, because, you know, the Death of X teasers they were putting about a year ago were, you know, the color palettes were like black, red. It looked like there was blood splatters. It made you think, okay, this is the end of all the X-Men, and, you know, we were right. You know, the X-Men are never going to come back, and Marvel hates the X-Men now. And then Inhumans versus X-Men came out, and everyone like, okay, we're getting an X-Men event, but, you know, knowing Marvel, X-Men are just going to lose. But then Resurrection gets announced before any of these events even come out, and the color palette are these really nice, like, whites and, like, light blues, and it gives you a really hopeful kind of sense. I can't really describe it, but like in some of the letters, you know, the X's and stuff like that look like their X-Men font. And then some of the other letters, like I think the O, no, there's no O. Yeah, there's no. It's like the Inhumans logo font style. So you think maybe they're going to come to some kind of agreement, something good, but something positive hopefully is finally going to happen to the X-Men. And it's kind of hard not to think that, because Marvel has recently announced that they're going to add a whole slate of new books to their X-Men publishing line. So on top of all new Wolverine, which you should be reading, and Old Man Logan, which are two great Wolverine books, and also Extraordinary X-Men, which is Marvel's premier X-team book right now. And I think Uncanny X-Men might also be continuing. I haven't found anything that gives specific word yet on if Uncanny X-Men, written by Cullen Bunn, art by Greg Land, if that's going to stick around. But anyway, we have four whole new series coming out. So to start off, I'm going to go with the solos, and then I'm going to go to what I assume are going to be the team books. So the solo books, Iceman is getting his own solo series, which has never happened before. He's had mini-series, and he's had maxi-series, and he's had specials, but Iceman has never had his own ongoing solo publishing book. And this is exciting because Iceman is a character. He's obviously one of the very original. He's one of the original five X-Men, debuting all the way back in 1963, X-Men number 1, September 10th. And, you know, he's been around forever. He's been around for years. And he's just like one of the faces of the X-Men. Now, recently, I believe it was in early 2015, Iceman was revealed to be gay. And what's crazy about that is Brian Michael Bendis specifically is one of the writers. He said, hey, I would like to do this with the character of X-Men. And Marvel gave him, you know, the full support to do so. So Brian Michael Bendis and Marvel as a collective took one of to be honest, one of the faces of their superhero line, Iceman. He's one of the original Marvel superheroes. And, you know, they took what was traditionally, a white male teenage character, and they've turned him into, you know, gay, which, to be honest, would not fly really back all the way in 1963, but it flies now. And now Iceman is in this perfect spot to represent the LGBT communities as a Marvel Comics hero who is both a mutant and homosexual. And what is awesome about that is, you know, you can, with the right writer, so there no, I should have prefaced with, no creative teams have been announced for any of these books yet. They're kind of holding that back from us because they want to see how interested we get before they announce any teams. But with the, like the same thing with America that I was talking about last week, where that's another LGBT headlined series. This is, with the right writer and the right artist, you could really turn Iceman into one of those books that's just really important and really means something. So, and especially because mutants, since the dawn of their time as Marvel Comics characters, they have been compared to and have been platforms for, you know, racial tensions at the time. They've been used to talk about, you know, what it means to be minority, whether it be race related or orientation related. The X-Men line to a lot of people stands for what it means to not fit in and why that's okay and how you can come to terms with that kind of stuff. On one of the websites I go to all the time, I get a lot of my news from there to get for you guys, Comic Book Resources, aka CBR.com. They have a columnist, Brett White, who is a gay man, and he loves the X-Men. He's not afraid to say how much he loves the X-Men. And he always talks about, you know, what they mean to him and what they meant to him. Because he didn't come out until, I believe, his college years. And he always talked about what the X-Men meant to him in a private sense and, like, how that helped him cope with it when he wasn't necessarily ready to share it with the world. So I think that's why the X-Men are important. And that's why the X-Men deserve a lot of love especially. And that's exactly why you should support Iceman. And we should all be really hopeful that Marvel nails the writing and art teams for this book. Because this could truly be something special. And could be the shining gem of the X-Men line coming up in a couple months. Anyways, the next solo series that got announced is Jean Grey, which is surprising because of all the X-Men to give a solo series, Jean Grey would never really be your first pick. Jean Grey is tradition. She's definitely one of Marvel's strongest woman characters. And again, she's one of the original five X-Men. She debuted as Marvel Girl all the way back in X-Men number one. And, you know, she's had a crazy history, and she's currently dead, kind of. So recently, in 2012, Beast, X-Men Beast, the big blue furry guy, he went back in time and got the original five X-Men. So he went back to, I'm putting air quotes, around 1963 because the Marvel timeline is sliding. So I guess now that would be probably like mid-80s. So Beast went back to the original X-Men, and he brought back the five original teenage heroes to snap Cyclops out of his kind of dark, militaristic X-Men kind of ways. And so ever since then, they haven't gone back yet. The original five X-Men have been in our present, their future, and have been developing more. And so it was actually the teenage Iceman who came out as gay. He was outed by Jean Grey, and then him and the adult Iceman had a conversation. It was really weird time travel stuff. Him and the adult Iceman have a conversation about all that and what it means and what it means for them. But anyway, back to Jean Grey. So teenage Jean Grey, the original Jean Grey, is in the present right now, but the actual Jean Grey that is from our time is dead, and she's been dead for about 12 years. So it'll be really interesting to see if something happens in either Death of X or in IVX that brings Jean Grey back. Because in the teaser image for X-Men Jean Grey number one in the Resurrection line, you have photos from all over her history. You have photos from most recently the Grant Morrison X-Men era. You have photos from when she was the Phoenix. You have photos from now when it's teenage Jean Grey. And same with the Iceman teaser picture. So it'll be really interesting to see if either of these two books choose to focus on what they choose to focus on, whether it be teenage Iceman or teenage Jean Grey, whether it be the adult ones, or whether it's the adult ones. So it'll be interesting to see what direction these books take. And Jean Grey especially has had a crazy history. She's gone from being a teenage psychic to the host of the world's most destructive cosmic force to a clone of a goblin demon queen to a kind of future mother to dead again to reborn to dead again. So she's had a crazy history, and to be completely honest, you know, not in a full 100% sense, but Jean Grey is often used as a way to make Marvel's X-Men characters feel some man pain. And man pain is kind of basically just, you know, someone, a character dies for the sake of a male character feeling some feels. And, you know, it's most commonly used between Wolverine and Cyclops, Jean Grey's two greatest loves. And so it'll just be awesome, and it'll be really exciting to see Jean Grey get her own vehicle to be her own character. And she has been her own character in the past, but to just be her own character and not have to rely on, and not have her character be defined by her relationships with two other characters. So I'm really excited to see what they can do with Jean Grey. I'm definitely excited to see if they bring Jean Grey back after being killed by the Phoenix Force years ago. It's always the Phoenix Force with Jean. Come on, Jean. Okay, now we're getting to the team books, Marvel's released team books. So Weapon X is honestly the biggest question mark of all of these recent X-Men announcements. So to go over the history of Weapon X would kind of possibly give us an idea of what Weapon X the book could possibly be about. So Weapon X in the history of Marvel continuity is the deadly Black Ops Science Division. They're just their own organization, and they commit horrible experiments on human beings, and they're responsible for actually a lot of the most famous Marvel characters. So they're responsible for turning Wolverine into the killing machine that he is. Wolverine was, of course, born centuries ago, but Weapon X gave him the metal claws. Weapon X tested on him and turned him into the feral beast that he really is. So that Weapon X is responsible for Wolverine. Weapon X, believe it or not, had a hand in creating the Super Soldier Serum that made Captain America. Weapon X helped give Deadpool his powers. Weapon X helped make Sabretooth, Lady Deathstrike, so many other ones. And so Weapon X is this really dark background. They're kind of this background radiation in all of Marvel Comics, and they have a hand in a lot of the darker characters that we know in the X-Men line. And so there have been Weapon X books in the past. The most famous Weapon X book would have to be the team book that followed Sabretooth as he led a clandestine team of dark mutants on Black Ops missions for the Weapon X facility and tried to keep them a secret. And then also, yeah, in the teaser photo that we have for Weapon X, we have photos of X-23, who's the female clone of Wolverine. We have photos of Wolverine. We have photos of Deadpool. We have photos of Sabretooth. And an interesting one, I believe this is Caliban, which would be interesting to see if he has a bigger role in this book, which wouldn't be surprising if they kind of want to bump his profile up, because he recently has been announced to be in the upcoming Logan film, which we had a trailer come out just this morning, so I'm going to be talking about that later. And so Weapon X will be really interesting to see what, because that's one of those labels, and that's one of those brands that you could really take anywhere with the right idea. So I'm excited to see if they take a darker spin, or if it's like a Black Ops kind of thing, or maybe it's an anthology book. We haven't had a good anthology book from Marvel in a while that just goes over different stories from all over the timeline. But either way, Weapon X would definitely be one of those exciting books to look out for. And then what really shocked me was I thought that those are going to be the only three books that I'd have to talk about with you guys today. But while I was making my notes, Marvel Comics dropped another X-Men bomb on me, and Generation X is coming back. So for those of you that may not have heard of Generation X launched in 1994 from Scott Lobdell with art by Chris Bachalo, and it ran for 75 issues over 7 years. And Generation X followed. It was one of the first big, like, new generation of X-Men heroes to ever come out of the X-Men line. X-Men, of course, had X-Men and then the giant-sized X-Men teams. But those were all the adult teams that we really knew, like Wolverine, Colossus, Cyclops, all those people. But then young X-Men, the New Mutants, came out, I believe, in the really early 90s or the really late 80s. And then it wasn't until 1994's Generation X that we really got a book focused on what it means to be a mutant, but also what it means to grow up as a teenager. So that featured a lot of characters that are X-Men mainstays now. So we have Danny Moonstar, we have Jubilee, of course, Husk, Hope, Hellion, Dust, Cannonball. You know, I'm looking at the teaser photo, and we have, you know, not only photos from the original Weapon X, Generation X team, excuse me, and Generation X, you know, it sounds like I'm holding it in kind of a high regard, because it really is one of those seminal X-Men runs that you've just got to read if you want to get kind of a sense of what the modern X-Men are about and what it means to be an X-Men, you know, when you're going through discovering that you have mutant powers to shoot fireworks out of your hands, but you're also going through puberty and learning what it means to, you know, have a relationship, or, you know, what you're worried about other people think about you. Generation X really spoke to a lot of the high school-aged and young college-aged students at the time that were reading Marvel Comics. So Generation X, absolutely, especially in this age of millennials, it'll be super awesome to see what kind of amazing talent Marvel can put on Generation X, considering there hasn't been a book named Generation X in 15 years, ever since it ended in 2001. So, you know, exciting. Definitely look out for Generation X. And then, so that's all the Marvel announcements for Resurrection. I'm sure there's going to be more. It's only Thursday. They have until spring, which is when the Resurrection line starts back up. They have until spring to really get all these books out. So I wouldn't be surprised if we got even two more X books to bring in this Resurrection banner. And that, you know, I'm really, really excited for Resurrection, because X-Men have gone through a rough patch. People think that Marvel doesn't love them, and Marvel's only given evidence to believe that they don't love them. But now Marvel's really pulling a 180, whether it was intended or not, and they're showing the fans that the X-Men are here, the X-Men line matters to Marvel, and, you know, Marvel should know that X-Men has been around since the beginning of Marvel. And there was a time, mind you, it was the 80s and the 90s, where if you weren't a book with an X in your title, no one freaking bought you, because X-Men was the sickest and the most fun. X-Men was the hot ticket way back then. So it'll be interesting to see if maybe possibly X-Men can get a little bit of that fever pitch back again and get the love that they deserve, because I really want to see it. And I'm absolutely going to definitely be looking out for Iceman specifically, because Iceman's one of my favorite X-Men. Next to, of course, Nightcrawler and Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man. And Jean Grey will just be interesting to see what they can do with the character. And then Generation X, I love a good team book. And if this is anything like, you know, one of the darker X-Men titles, Uncanny X-Force, which I'll be getting to soon, then Weapon X is definitely going to be one you want to read. But, so that's enough of the comic announcements. So before I get into the X-Men stories that I think you should read if you want to get a good little fix before the X-Men wave comes back, I definitely want to talk about the movie trailer that dropped this morning, because that caught me completely off guard. Logan got its first trailer this morning, and to be honest, it's a little weird, but X-Men is all about being super weird. So Logan, we get this trailer, and it was just a Green Band trailer, but if you go and watch the Red Band trailer, you can get a sense of a lot of the crazy violence and, you know, a lot of the language they're going to be using in this film, which feels very Wolverine. It's not overdone. It's not like, okay, because Deadpool did it and they did good, we're going to do it. But, you know, really excited. So it shows this withered, beat down, scarred Logan Wolverine, and he's in this what looks like a wasteland kind of situation. So they're definitely pulling a lot of inspiration from Old Man Logan. And, you know, he meets up with an older Charles Xavier who looks like he's going a little loony, which could be a little odd. And he meets a little girl who has Wolverine claws. And what that means is X-23 is finally going to get introduced to the cinematic universes of all these comic book movies. And X-23 is one of the biggest success stories in comics because she wasn't even made for comic books. Back in the early 2000s when they had X-Men Evolution on the cartoon channels, X-23 was a character that was introduced for that cartoon and in that cartoon. And then she was such a big hit as a female clone, a younger female clone of Wolverine. So technically she's Wolverine's daughter. You know, she was such a huge hit that she made waves in comics. She's had a couple ongoing series, and now she's the freaking Wolverine. She's the Wolverine of the Marvel Universe. And that's truly, because usually with diehard comic fans, if you weren't a comic, then, you know, it doesn't really matter, right? But for this cartoon character to really just make such an impression and then find her way into the hearts of X-Men fans is truly something awesome. And X-23 is such a great success story that she's the Wolverine in Marvel Comics, and she's going to have a turn up in movies. So it's a much younger version of the Laura Kinney that we know. She looks to be about maybe 10 or 12, and in comics she's typically about, you know, 17 or 18. And so definitely go watch the Logan trailer. If this was a visual medium, I would absolutely show it to you. And I know as much as you guys want to hear my live reaction to me watching the trailer, I'm going to skip on to my recommended X-Men stories. But before I do that, I want to remind you guys that this is Between the Panels, where we talk everything comics all the time. This is DJ Powers on radio.dominican.edu. And we're actually going to go on a quick break, and we'll come back and I'll recommend you some hot takes on X-Men, and we'll get to it. See you guys after the break.
Get out there and get active with your kids. This public service announcement has been brought to you by the DJs of Penguin Radio.
Didn't want to come back from that break. That's such a good song, but I had to do it to you guys. You know, we got to talk about X-Men. We're still talking about X-Men, and that's a good thing. You know, again, that's a good thing. Don't be afraid to love the X-Men. So, you know, I've been talking about X-Men all day, and I figured what better way to end today than give you guys my personal favorite X-Men stories that you could possibly read to get you in the X-Men mutant loving mood and get you excited for what's coming. So we're gonna start from the top. It's a graphic novel. It's a one-and-done story. X-Men, God Loves, Man Kills. It's a little bit of a darker title, but it really examines a lot of the social and political themes of the X-Men in a really chilling and really realistic manner. Chris Claremont wrote the graphic novel in 1982 with Brent Anderson on art, and it touched upon a lot of the themes of racism and religion that the mutants of the X-Men can really emulate that are unfortunately all too relevant in today's day and age. So it's X-Men social X-Men highlighting social commentary at its very finest. And it follows the story of what if a certain preacher gets enough traction within, you know, his fame and, you know, his church, and he launches this full-on hate war against the X-Men. So it's about the X-Men, you know, fighting for their lives on the streets of New York and how they can prove to the world that they're not evil and that they're just here to help. They want to coexist, and they believe in the peaceful dream of mutants and humans living together. It has some awesome moments from all X-Men characters you know and love, especially Jean, especially Kitty Pryde. Kitty Pryde is the heart and soul of the X-Men team in this book, and you absolutely need to read X-Men God Loves, Man Kills if you want to see the smartest possible X-Men writing, especially from Chris Claremont, who is the patriarch of the X-Men writing families. So, next up, we have another, of course, Chris Claremont-written story with art by John Byrne and David Cockrum, X-Men The Dark Phoenix Saga. So The Dark Phoenix Saga is the magnum opus and the shining gem of the entirety of Chris Claremont's time with the X-Men, and it is the X-Men story that all other X-Men stories strive to be. So it follows the story of what if the Phoenix Force, the Dark Phoenix Force, that had manifested itself within Jean Grey and revived her from the dead, proved itself to not be as good as maybe the X-Men were led to believe. And it took over Jean's sanity, and it destroyed tons of planets, and it was coming for Earth next, and the X-Men knew that the only way to stop Jean and the Phoenix was to put an end to Jean Grey, you know, the love of both Wolverine and Cyclops. So The Dark Phoenix Saga is just the epitome of what the X-Men are. It is the epitome of Chris Claremont's run, and it goes from, you know, humble beginnings in Earth from when, you know, they were fighting the Hellfire Club, and it goes all the way out into space and back again and back on the moon, and it has these epic fights and these character moments. It's really tragic, it's really exciting, and it's an all-around X masterpiece. Absolutely read The Dark Phoenix Saga for some of the most iconic moments ever to be put onto the page, and just so you can say, hey, I know X-Men because I read The Dark Phoenix Saga. So next up, I have Rick Remender's Uncanny X-Force. And seriously, guys, I can't talk about Uncanny X-Force enough. But so the X-Force line commonly in the X-Books is usually the darker kind of Black Ops team of X-Men. And what that usually is a clandestine team of mutant killers that search to stop threats to mutant kind before they could possibly happen. And Rick Remender, who I've praised as one of my favorite writers, he writes Deadly Class. His Uncanny X-Force team followed a brand new team of Wolverine, Phantom X, Deadpool, Psylocke, and Archangel. And it dealt with the... Angel was only on the team because Angel, previously in his history in the 80s during the X-Factor run, was infected by Apocalypse to be the Horseman of Death. And this whole series grapples with the fact of, okay, we have to A, kill a clone of Apocalypse, even though he's just a child. Do we do that? Do we kill a child? Do we punish someone for what they might do? Or do we punish someone, or do we let them live and we see what happens? And then they also have to grip with the fact that they have an agent of Apocalypse in their ranks in the form of Angel, who's one of their best friends, and they don't know if he's going to succumb to Apocalypse's dark grip. So the first 18 issues of the series follow the Dark Angel Saga. So yeah, I just jumped from the Dark Phoenix Saga to the Dark Angel Saga. And Rick Remender's Dark Angel Saga honestly might stack up, if not even be better than the Dark Phoenix Saga, because it hops from different dimensions, different locales all around the Earth. We've got, you know, Wolverine, Deadpool, Psylocke, Phantom X with their backs against the wall. And it's just this super dark, super tragic, but you just can't put the book down. Amazing X-Men story. If you want to get one of the greatest X-Men stories that'll go down in history as one of the best X-Men runs by Rick Remender to ever be put onto the page, then absolutely get Uncanny X-Force Dark Angel Saga. You can get volumes 1 and 2 of that specific story arc in stores anywhere you want, Amazon even. Definitely check out your local comic book shop, though, because you can get all these other great comics there. So next up, I have Amazing X-Men by Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness. It is Ed McGuinness I've talked about, and Jason Aaron I've both talked about, so it's no wonder why I'm bringing up a lot of these stories. But Jason Aaron is one of my favorite writers. He's doing Mighty Thor, Southern Bastards, The Goddamn. Ed McGuinness is one of the best artists in the biz. He's old school. He was around for Deadpool. He helped create Deadpool. And he's – no, he didn't help create Deadpool, but he did help do Deadpool's first solo series. And he's currently doing Spider-Man and Deadpool with Joe Kelly. So the Amazing X-Men storyline is an opening arc by Jason Aaron. And this is a book where X-Men stories are usually dark and mopey, and not mopey in a bad way. That's some of the soap opera element of it. But where X-Men stories are usually not uplifting, Amazing X-Men is absolutely uplifting. And it celebrates what's fun about being an X-Man and celebrates what's fun about reading comics. And the opening arc follows Wolverine as he leads a group of heroic X-Men into the middle of an all-out war between the forces of heaven and hell themselves, all in the hopes of saving the soul of their deceased friend and heart of the X-Men, Nightcrawler. So prior to this series, Nightcrawler had been deceased for, I believe, about 6 years, and Nightcrawler, for those of you who read X-Men, is basically the heart and soul of the X-Men books. He kind of got the worst of it with his mutant gene. You know, not only does he have the powers of teleportation, but he has, you know, three fingers on each hand, three fingers in each toe. He's blue. He has fur. He has pointy ears and fangs and these bright yellow eyes. So he's really in, you know, the general definition of the word, you know, a freak. And it makes these for the way people hate mutants in the world of Marvel. Nightcrawler got the worst of it, but he never let that get him down, and he smiles the biggest, and he laughs the hardest out of all the X-Men, and he had passed away in about 2008 in the Second Coming storyline of X-Men, and this story brought him back, and that was really exciting for me, because Nightcrawler is my second favorite X-Men, next to a certain X-Men who we're going to talk about in our next recommendation. But it was just amazing to see him come back. The art was cool. The story was fun. It was really like a pirate story because it was all this crazy swashbuckling, like, pirate ships in heaven and hell. So if you want to get just a fun X-Men story, definitely pick up Amazing X-Men. And to close off today, I'm going to talk about my final recommendation for the X-Men line is all of Peter David's run with X-Factor. Starting in the 1990s. So in the 1990s, when Peter David picked up the X-Factor series, he wanted to do something new, so he turned it into a team of private investigators that solve crimes related to other mutants. And, like, holy crap, what a weird, fun concept. But the heart and soul of the X-Factor's Investigations Bureau, because of Peter David, would have to be Jamie Madrox, the Multiple Man, who was a C-list character introduced in the Fantastic Four as a mutant. But he's seriously, you know, he's one of Marvel's most troubled mutants. He's one of the Marvel's most complex mutants. And Peter David took this guy and he ran with him and made him the heart and soul of this book. He has the power to just make more of himself and then take those duplicates back into him. And so over his X-Factor run ended in 2010 or 11. So over 15 years, Peter David really just made this team of misfits, and they were misfits in the world of X-Men, which is really saying something. So he made this team of misfits work with people like Polaris, Havoc, Multiple Man, Strong Guy, Wolfsbane, Siren, and the X-Factor run has some of the craziest stories and some of the most personal stories. There are a lot of issues that made me choke up and made me tear up because of the crazy stuff he puts his characters through, but all in the end, it's for character development. It makes them stronger. So if you want, for what my money is, one of the best X-Men line runs in the business, pick up anything from Peter David's X-Factor run, because Peter David is one of those writers where when you talk about a certain character and a certain character's history, they always have their quote-unquote, oh, their Peter David run. So X-Factor has their Peter David run, Incredible Hulk, Spider-Man 2099. Peter David is one of those outstanding classic Marvel writers. So absolutely read X-Factor from Peter David. And with that, that's all my X-Men news with the week for you guys. I was going to get to Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, got its first trailer yesterday, and boy, oh boy, was that something special. So next week, we're finally going to get to it. Next week, we're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy, my favorite movie to ever exist, and we're going to talk about why that's special. We're going to talk about Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 and what's coming up. So I'll see you guys next week. This has been DJ Powers on Between the Panels, where we talk everything comics all the time. I'll see you guys next Thursday at 2 o'clock. And be sure to tune in to DJ Fizz's What's Poppin' at 5 o'clock later today. Excelsior, guys.